This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're talking about tax credits available to Hoosiers in light of changes coming to child tax credits through the Biden administration's $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan. If you have any questions or comments for our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, it's 866-476-3881. With us now is Jessica Fraser, Director of the Institute for Working Families. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jessica, the IRS announced monthly child tax credit payments to start in July. What is changing and what does this all mean?
Yes. So in the American Rescue Plan, there is a one-year expansion to the federal child tax credit. And this is an expansion in a couple of ways. First, lower income families are going to receive an extra $1,000 per child. So upper income families up to $400,000 a year receive $2,000 per child. Lower income families are going to receive $3,000 per child. So that's the first expansion. The second expansion is that the credit is now fully refundable. And what that means is that, previously you were not eligible for the credit unless you had a federal tax liability. So lower income families who did not have tax liability were not able to get any of the credit at all. And so now it's fully refundable. If you qualify for the credit, you will get the full credit, whether you have a tax liability or not. And then, as you already mentioned, they're going to pay these out in regular payments starting in July. So families don't have to wait till next tax season to get the benefit of these child tax credits. And the best part for Indiana is how much of a huge benefit this is going to have for Hoosier families. So the center. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just wondering, so is the money that's coming in these tax credit you mentioned, is it going up at all? Or is it just the people's income levels eligibility for it changing?
So it's going up by that $1,000 per child. So, it depends on your income level. Some people will not see a difference in their child tax credit, but some families will see a big difference. The very lowest income families who don't carry a tax liability were not really getting the credit at all in the past. And so now that it's fully refundable, they will now be eligible for this full $3,000 per child tax credit. And then again, it's up that $1,000 per child for lower income families. So that's an additional bump.
And this is becoming part of this new child tax credit. Is that due to this COVID relief funding?
Yes. So this was put in place just for 1 year in the American Rescue Plan. And so it is sort of a one-time, sort of additional stimulus for the American Rescue Plan. However, the Biden administration did put it in his American Families Plan as a five-year expansion. So if that were to pass, this newly expanded child tax credit would last for a little while longer. Like I said, this is a huge benefit to Hoosier families. So the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities released some estimates by state of what the benefits would be. And they estimate that over 1.4 million Hoosier kids will benefit from these changes to the child tax credit. And over 500,000 of those are just from that piece I talked about making it refundable, about making folks who have always income qualified but didn't have federal tax liability now eligible to receive the credit.
Were you surprised by this tax credit expansion? Is this pretty significant?
I think it's very significant. And some people are saying that if we did go ahead and expand it out for another five years total, that we could cut deep poverty among children in half, which is amazing. So I was not expecting it to be as generous as it was. Certainly, we have been hoping for the full refundability for a long time. It's something that many advocates across the country have been advocating for. It's something that we asked to have in previous COVID relief packages. So that in particular is something that we're very excited about.
Yeah, I'm wondering, does this set precedent, that if it can be done, then it can be done again? Or is this like a concern that do we even have the money to keep doing stuff like this?
Sure. I mean, I think certainly people will be concerned about the return on investment and, you know, how this impacts the deficit, how it impacts overall federal spending. But I think that what a lot of people will find is that this is going to have such a multiplier effect for local economies. The lower income families spend every dime they earn just trying to make ends meet and get everything all together. And so, you know, I think families are going to spend this money. They're going to spend it on their kids. They're going to spend it in their local grocery stores. They're going to spend it at schools, help, you know, sending their kids on field trips and all those sorts of things. They're going to spend it on school supplies. And so I think that overall, when, you know, when we get the full look at what the overall impact of this is going to be, it's going to raise kids out of poverty for sure. But it, I think it's also going to improve the economy for everybody. So I think, you know, if we can make that case, it would be great to see something like this be permanent, because it really is focused in on, you know, dealing with child poverty specifically.
Right, right. Well, if you're just joining us, we're talking about tax credits available to Hoosiers in light of changes coming to child tax credits through the Biden administration's $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan. And with us is Jessica Fraser, director of the Institute for Working Families. Jessica, just to back up, we may not know what a child tax credit is. You know, what does that mean in the grand scheme of things?
Sure. So the child tax credit is one of a few credits that the federal government has for working families in America. And this is a credit to offset the cost of raising a child. And so depending on your income level, you can be eligible for, previous to the American Rescue Plan, $2,000 per child, up to $400,000 for married couples, and I think it's $200,000 for other types of families. You could be eligible for this credit to sort of offset the, you know, everyone knows how expensive it is to raise a child. And so it just sort of offsets that, that cost for families.
In addition to this tax credit, are there any other tax credits coming through President Biden's American Rescue Plan?
So there are, there is a credit around, the recovery rebate credits. And that is a credit to make sure that you get the amount of stimulus that you should have gotten. If for some reason you figure out that you didn't get the stimulus amounts that you should have gotten in the previous stimulus payments, there's a rebate credit. That's the only new credit that I'm aware of. But there were also changes to the earned income tax credit in the American Rescue Plan. And this is a credit specifically to lift families out of poverty and incentivize work. And it has been one of the single most effective anti-poverty policies that we have ever done, in my estimation. And so the changes in the American Rescue Plan to this credit are that it was expanded for workers without children. And so they did that by raising both the income cap, you know, under which a childless worker would be eligible for the credit, but also it lifting up the credit itself and increasing that amount. Mm-hmm. So that is the change made.
Can you explain a little bit what the earned income tax credit is?
Absolutely. So if you have earned income at the federal level and you earn within the guidelines, and I'll say what that is in a minute, then you are eligible for this earned income tax credit. Depending on your filing status, whether you're single or married filing jointly, you are eligible for differing amounts, and you also are eligible for different, you have different income limits. So it can be confusing, and that's why it's really important to like read over the documents when you're filing your taxes or use the software that helps you figure this out. But for example, a couple that is married filing jointly with three kids is eligible for the earned income tax credit if they earn under $56,844 in this tax year 2020. So, you know, nearly $57,000. If you earn under that amount and you have three kids, that's your income limit to say whether or not you're eligible. And then your maximum benefits would be $6,660 for that family of three. And so the benefits are scaled based on how many children you have in your household. So the maximum for a worker without children is $538, up to that $6,600 I mentioned. And the nice thing about the earned income tax credit is it was very well designed to be on a sliding scale. So the benefits decrease gradually or phase out gradually as your income gets closer and closer to the limit. And that helps to not create a cliff that would maybe disincentivize people from getting raises. The point of the program was to incentivize work and then also make sure that people were encouraged to, you know, earn more, take raises and things like that. So, that's how the EITC works at the federal level. We also have a state EITC that works a little bit differently that I can talk about if you'd like. But just that change for childless workers is estimated to help benefit 382,000 Hoosier workers without children from the American Rescue Plan.
So there's a lot of stuff, I guess, with this rescue plan that's playing out through the tax credits. What about speaking more about this earned income tax credit? Did anything happen around that at the State House during the recent legislative session?
We did. It's very good news to tell you that Indiana just passed an increase in its state earned income credit from 9% to 10% of the federal credit effective January 2022. So it's not effective for this tax season, but it will be, I believe, for next tax season. And this is the first increase that I can think of in nearly 15 years, I would say. I think the last time we increased the credit, I don't remember for sure, but I believe it was in like 2007 or 2008, from 6% to 9%. And that it could even have been sooner, you know, further back than that. So it's been a long time since we've increased our earned income tax credit in Indiana. And so this was a very welcome change in our legislative session. And that was a bill, House Bill 1009, which was authored by Representative Goodrich in the state legislature. So that was very exciting news.
This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. You've just heard part of a conversation I had yesterday with Jessica Frazier, director of the Indiana Institute for Working Families. We'll be back after a quick break with the rest of that conversation, and we'll be joined live by two new guests after that. We're talking about the complicated world of tax credits today in light of the newly expanded child tax credits as part of President Biden's $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. You can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it in on the show. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking today about changes to child tax credits and how it'll impact families in Indiana. We'll listen now to the last part of the conversation I had yesterday with Jessica Frazier, director of the Indiana Institute for Working Families. After that, we'll have two legal experts join us to dig a little deeper. You know, when it comes to navigating all of this stuff, how difficult is it for people?
I think it is challenging, you know, especially when every, state has different, you know, ways that they do their tax credits, and then the federal credits on top of it can be very confusing. And you really have to be able to sort of sift through a lot of information unless you have someone who can help you, or you're able to use some of the softwares that are out there. But, you know, for example, Indiana changed our earned income tax credit several years back. Many states have just a flat percentage of the federal credit. But in Indiana, we did something called decoupling our credit from the federal credit. So it, meaning that back in 2010, during the last financial crisis, the federal government expanded the earned income tax credit at that time, and Indiana sort of opted out of that expansion. And so we calculate our credit as it would have been if it were still the way it was done previous to that law passing in 2010. And so that adds a lot of tables and paperwork if you're trying to fill out your state tax, you know, taxes by hand, to kind of sift through all of that and do the math and figure out, you can't just take your federal credit and do 9% and be done. You have to kind of go through this extra process. So you know, luckily, many low-income individuals could be eligible for free use of some of those tax software. And additionally, there are sites all over the state called Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Sites or VITA sites. And so sometimes you can find those sites, and there are folks there who are volunteers that are there to help lower-income individuals fill out their taxes. So,
but when it comes to sort of misconceptions around tax credits, are there certain things that you hear come up a lot?
I don't hear a lot about tax credits specifically, other than being, you know, sometimes there's concern about how, what the impact will be on offsetting the revenue. And, you know, I mm-hmm. think sometimes, you know, if we just look at that number alone and we don't look at, for example, the, you know, there's also going to be a sales tax revenue increase because you're putting money back in families' pockets and they're going to go out and spend it in many cases, especially with some of these ones that are targeted towards families that are low to moderate income. So that's something we hear. I think the biggest thing we hear is people just not understanding sort of how much of a lower income person's income they actually are paying in taxes. I think there's this perception that, especially in Indiana where we have the flat income tax rate, that, you know, everyone's paying this flat income tax rate. But if you earn less and you have less to spare and you're paying sales tax and you're paying property taxes, or you're paying, you know, even if you're a renter, you're still paying, contributing to property taxes, and you're paying an income tax, it's taking up a chunk that is maybe proportionally seems the same, but because you have less to spare, it has a bigger impact on your ability to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, one of the things we'd love to see at the state level is us raising the floor of, you know, how low income, you know, how much income is taxed in Indiana. But that is not something that's been on the table in recent years. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you, is there anything being done to make it more equitable, I guess, you know, when it comes to that income tax?
Yeah. not really in recent years in Indiana. There have been several lawmakers who have tried to author bills around having a state level version of that child tax credit, or even there's another federal credit called the Child and Dependent Care Tax Credit, and 24 states have a state level version of that credit as well. Six states have a state level version of the child tax credit. And so there have been lawmakers who have thought about that. Especially that child and dependent care tax credit, I think, is attractive because I do think that a lot of lawmakers see the connection between the high cost of childcare as a, you know, as something that is a barrier to keeping people in the workplace. So there has been some conversation around that, but there has not been any conversation around sort of raising the income tax floor, or what would be a much bigger change would be something like a progressive tax structure, like we have at the, you know, getting away from the flat rate income tax that we have.
Mm-hmm. And do you see any hope for that changing anytime soon, or it's going to be the long haul?
I think that's the long haul. I don't see any, any hope for that in the near future, but I do think that we could do something around the child tax credit or the child independent care tax credit. So that's one of the things that the Institute will be focusing on in the coming years is doing some more research and education around those two credits.
Right. And is there a reason why Indiana doesn't have the state level child tax credit? Was there ever one?
I don't believe there ever was one. At least not in my memory throughout my career. You know, only six states have that. So I think that has been sort of a newer trend that states are starting to realize, like, oh, there's this federal structure that we could easily copy in our own tax codes. So, you know, I think that just hadn't occurred to anybody before, maybe. Many more states have that child and dependent care tax credit. So that is certainly more popular and gives us more, you know, we don't have to recreate the wheel. We can go and look at what these other states have done and sort of model how it would work and how many people it impact and what it would cost for Indiana to do things that are similar. So, but even states like Idaho and Oklahoma have a child tax credit. States such as Kentucky and Kansas, also Oklahoma, Arkansas have a child and dependent care tax credit. So I certainly think that it's something that, can be bipartisan and can be, the value of it can be seen across the whole political spectrum. So I am hopeful about those.
Well, as we get ready to wrap up here, are there any resources people can go to learn about this and make sure that they understand what's going on?
Absolutely. So I really encourage folks to go to the IRS's website, the Internal Revenue Service's website. They have a list of credits and deductions that are available for individuals. And there are many, many credits that we didn't have time to talk about today. Credits for specific things like adoption or buying energy efficient, you know, things for your home. So many credits that people might be able to take advantage of regardless of income level. And then Indiana also has a similar list on their website. It's the Indiana Department of Revenue's website. And I think we can get links to the listeners for those lists. And that could really help you be a starting point. Also, if you are a low to moderate income Hoosier, look and find where your local VITA site is, and they can help give you tax preparation support.
I'm Miriam Sobe with All In. You've been listening to a conversation with Jessica Frazier, director of the Indiana Institute for Working Families. And one quick point of clarification, Jessica mentioned in that interview that there's an increase on child tax credits from $2,000 to $3,000, but wanted us to mention that that number is $3,600 for each child younger than six for families with an income up to $150,000. We're talking about changes to child tax credits and how it will affect people and families in Indiana. We're joined live now by two legal experts who help Hoosiers navigate these complicated but incredibly important issues. Josh Lowenthal is a staff attorney for the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic at Indiana Legal Services, and Dee Dee Gowan is a senior staff attorney for the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic at Indiana Legal Services. Welcome to both of you.
Hey, Miriam. Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
I want to start with you, Dee Dee. You specialize in child tax credits. What was your reaction to the changes that are coming?
I was very excited to see the changes, especially because we understand that they will pull 50% of children in Indiana out of poverty.
And how much of an impact do you think this will have on Hoosiers overall now that these child tax credits are being expanded?
I think it will have a significant impact in addition to providing more funds. They're also going to be provided monthly. We're expecting half of the tax credit to be paid out from July through December. And I think getting those funds monthly will help put food on the table and help pay, to put children in homes and clothe children.
We don't know that this will be a permanent change just yet, but if it does become permanent, how significant will this be?
Right. If it's permanent, it will pull 50% of children in our state out of poverty is what they're estimating.
Mm-hmm. And are you hopeful this will become a permanent thing? Is there any indication at all right now, or is this more like a test phase?
It's hopeful. Mm-hmm. At Indiana Legal Services, we can't advocate either way, but can certainly say what impact it'll have, and it will have a tremendously positive impact for folks to fight poverty and empower our clients.
Mm-hmm. And Josh, let's talk a little bit about what you do at Indiana Legal Services. Can you give us a rundown?
Yeah, absolutely. So both Dee Dee and myself are a part of one of the many projects at Indiana Legal Services called the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic. So this clinic is actually a mix of both federally funded and state funded. It comes from both types of funding, but specifically the type of work that we do is we handle any number of what we call tax controversy cases. To distill that a little bit more, what that really means is that we represent low-income taxpayers in front of both the Internal Revenue Service, if they're having issues with any number of tax problems, whether that's audits or if the IRS is trying to collect from them, as well as state tax agencies, specifically the Indiana Department of Revenue.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the most common questions you get from folks about taxes or even tax credits?
So we see a number of different questions. A lot of times it's, are we eligible for something like the child tax credit, or are we eligible for the rebate recovery credit. A lot of times we will see any number of problems for low-income taxpayers who come to us. They've most recently filed a tax return. They were audited, weren't aware that help is out there. And so now the IRS is trying to come and collect from them, saying, you know, hey, taxpayer, you owe $3,000, $5,000, $10,000. And, you know, our job, our goal is really just to be a resource for them and to help them through these problems, to both negotiate down those tax debts and oftentimes eliminate them completely.
Mm-hmm. And Didi, is that the same thing for you? Are those the kinds of questions that you get from folks?
Yes. A lot of times folks will come in because they have a letter in the mail from the IRS questioning something. And if it's an exam letter, it might be 12 pages long, and it's just too complicated for them to understand and even more to navigate the IRS on their own. So we really encourage folks, if you get some sort of letter in the mail from the IRS or the Indiana Department of Revenue, to reach out to us. Mm-hmm. A bigger bucket, that's probably about 25% of what we do. A bigger bucket of what we do is folks that they're not really disputing what they owe. They just need help dealing with owing. And so the IRS has collection alternatives, like they have payment plans. Same with the Indiana Department of Revenue. And they have hardship status. They also have something called offer and compromise, where you can put a huge, and Josh and I were just talking about a couple of those cases earlier today, where you put together a package and show the IRS or the Indiana Department of Revenue that the person just doesn't have the ability to pay. And so, you know, we ask them to discharge the tax liabilities for a much smaller amount. And so dealing with owing, I would say, is probably 50% of our casework. And then, so that leaves about 25% of our casework. We do represent taxpayers in the United States Tax Court. That probably represents, maybe 5% of what we do. And maybe the other 15-20% are things like identity theft. You know, we've had fraudsters fly into our city here in Indianapolis and knock on apartment doors, offer to prepare free tax returns, and then routed all of those refunds to their own personal accounts. And so those are examples of identity theft, where we go in and help those taxpayers deal with those problems. Other things we help with are something called innocent spouse and injured spouse. Innocent spouse would be like if someone had been a victim, had been horribly abused, and then they get out of that marriage and discover that, you know, maybe their spouse had amassed massive tax liabilities that they didn't know anything about. And so we would help them, you know, apply for something called innocent spouse relief. That's something that we do. So that's kind of, you know, a broad range of the different types of cases that we handle. We also sometimes can resolve an issue just by having a consultation with the taxpayer. So we don't necessarily have to represent them. We might represent around 125 new cases a year, but we also probably do another 80 to 100 consultations with taxpayers that just have questions, and we can help them by walking through the problem with them and giving them some advice. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to cases, representing clients and consultations, we also do education and outreach. A lot of people have tax problems. I always say, I don't worry about the folks that get to us, because we're going to help them navigate the problem and help them get to a good resolution. It's those folks that don't know anything about what we do. And that's why I'm so thankful that you're having us on today, and we can help educate and spread the word, get outreach out there about what we do, so people know there are free services out there to help them if they have some sort of dispute with the IRS, if they have a letter in the mail that they don't understand from the IRS or the IDOR, or if they owe and they've struggling, you know, to deal with that, reach out to us and let us help you navigate that process. Most likely, if you navigate that process on your own, the result will reflect an inability to navigate the IRS. But if you come get our help, we can help you get to the right result.
Mm-hmm. And what is the threshold for income for folks to come get services?
Thanks for asking that. A lot of programs are 125% of the poverty level. The low-income taxpayer clinic, thankfully, doubles that in. So it's about 250% of the poverty level, which is about 40, the lower 48% income level for our state. And we also can accept 10% of our cases over income, and we monitor that and we do that. So most people can get help from us if they reach out to us, and that's just for representation. Let me clarify. We talked about 80 to 100 cases we do a year that are just consultations where we coach people how to handle that. And that does not have an income threshold.
Mm-hmm. And just to be a little bit clear, when you say 250% of the poverty level, is there a number on that, like under, I don't know, $15,000 a year or something?
And I don't remember the exact numbers. If you can Google the poverty level, and it varies by household size. So, it's in the 30s. I apologize. I forget the exact number. I don't know if Josh, if you know it, but for a household of one, and then it increases depending on the household size. And it's adjusted every year in the spring.
Yep. And just to, I believe that the ceiling on that for a household of one is about $38,000. And then it progressively increases up to a family of four or five as well, just respectively.
All right. Well, we'll be back after a quick break. We're talking with legal experts about tax credits and unemployment in Indiana. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back after a quick break. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Back now to our discussion on taxes in Indiana. We've been learning about changes going into effect around child tax credits and digging into some of the complex, frustrating issues people run into while they're doing their taxes. As always, you can reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana if you have any questions or comments, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. With us is Josh Lowenthal, staff attorney for the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic at Indiana Legal Services, and Dee Dee Gowan is a senior staff attorney for the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic at Indiana Legal Services as well. Before the break, I know, Dee Dee, you touched up a little bit on things like identity theft, people having to go to tax court, some of the stuff that you guys work with. I'm wondering, why is it so complicated? Why can't it just be straightforward for folks who are dealing with the IRS or filing taxes?
That's a very good question, and I don't have a good answer other than that's the way our current tax code has been enacted.
Mm-hmm. And Josh, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Miriam, as Dee Dee said, that is a great question. And some of this, I think, really relates back to just the history of the federal income tax dating back to 1913, and that successively over the years, we continue to layer on as to the tax code. And so then it just becomes this maze of provisions and statutes that it becomes our job as tax professionals to weave through and guide taxpayers through to really help them as best mm-hmm. as we can.
Do you encounter clients who are just petrified and scared? Because, I mean, I can imagine if you get a letter from the IRS, it's like, am I going to jail?
All the time. And we're really here to serve, as I mentioned before, that resource, as well as just an ear, and to be reassuring to our taxpayers that, absent, something very egregious, you're not going to go to jail. It is going to be okay. And we're going to help walk you through this because we do understand these issues mm-hmm. more than anything else.
Well, yes. Josh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to jump in on that question and say, one of the great things I get to do when this interview is over is call a client and say, just before this interview today, the IRS settled your case. And, he came to us in the fall because he was unable to navigate the process himself. And then we just filed in tax court in March, and we'll be calling him to let him know his case was settled after this. And that's pretty exciting phone call to make.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that's a great feeling. Well, Josh, I do want to ask you about unemployment compensation. You did a presentation on this last week. What do people need to know right now who might be dealing with that?
Absolutely, Miriam. So as we get towards the end of tax filing season this year, which is going to be the last day to file your taxes is May 17th, there still is quite a few people out there that need to file their taxes. As back in March, as part of the American Rescue Plan Act, Congress passed a law and included in one of the many provisions there, as well as those updates to the child tax credit, was what we this federal exclusion for unemployment compensation. Effectively, what it did was allow taxpayers to exclude from their gross income, meaning all income that they earned that year, up to $10,200 for an individual or $20,400 for married couples from their adjusted gross income or their gross income, and that ultimately reduces their tax burden for 2020. The biggest misconception, though, that I tend to see when it relates to unemployment is whether or not it's taxable. And the simple answer is yes. Yes, it is taxable, and it does need to be reported on both your federal income tax return as well as your state income tax return.
Mm-hmm. Is it sometimes not worth it to take unemployment if you're going to be taxed on it?
It's really not something for me to really opine on too much. That being said, there are ways for you to withhold when you are receiving unemployment compensation. So I believe that can be done through the Department of the DWD's website, where you can withhold some of your taxes. So similar to a W-2, where you mm-hmm. have an exemption, you have some of those funds withheld before you receive every check. And that way it will help reduce your tax burden come filing season and filing time.
Mm-hmm. And Dee Dee, the IRS is currently behind on tax returns. Is this a really big issue, or is this business as usual?
Yes, the IRS is backlogged about 30 million 2020 tax returns that need manual processing. They're backlogged on paper returns that were filed, when they were still closed, 2019 returns. So this is a very unusual time, and the IRS is tremendously behind, doing the best it can, working very hard, but tremendously behind.
So you said 30 million manual entries that they need to do.
Correct.
So that seems like it's going to take, I don't know, a couple of years. Are we going to see anything on our returns anytime soon?
Hopefully in the weeks and months ahead, we'll see great progress on that front. They have processed 91 million tax returns. It's just 30 million that need manual processing and are backlogged.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to ask both of you, feel free to answer either of you. When it comes to filing taxes, are there folks who are exempt? For example, if they're under a certain income level, do they not have to file taxes?
Yes, that's correct. You don't have a filing requirement if you have income that's under a certain amount, depending on how you file. Sometimes there's confusion between self-employment income and wage income, because the filing requirement, if you have wages, if you're an employee, you know, are much higher, equivalent to the standard deduction, where unless you're claiming a credit, then of course you want to file and claim that credit. But if you have self-employment income, the threshold is only $400, and that triggers a filing requirement because of the self-employment income.
Okay.
And just to jump in there to clarify, and just because you might not have a filing requirement, meaning that you actually have to go and file that tax return this year, we've seen in 2020 that you still might want to file your tax return. And this gets back to one of the credits that Jessica was talking about on your prior interview with the rebate recovery credit. And so the rebate recovery credit ties very closely into the stimulus payments that taxpayers have received over the past year or so. Some of our taxpayers that we've seen in our clinic did not receive those first, second, or third stimulus payments. And so in order to actually receive those payments, there's a requirement to go and file your tax return so that you can actually receive that credit and mm-hmm. refund.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was wondering about that. You know, if you're not required to file a tax return, are you going to miss out on some of the benefits? We have a question from Emily on Facebook who says, can you talk more about the age range for the child tax credit? I have a 17-year-old high school junior and don't think he qualifies. His birthday, like many others in his class, falls before the end of the tax year. It seems strange that high school juniors and seniors don't qualify, or am I misunderstanding?
I'm so glad that you asked this question. One of the expansions in the child tax credit under the American Recovery Plan Act is that 17-year-olds are now included. It used to be that it was under 17, and now it has been expanded to include 17-year-olds. So just to give a quick summary, the child tax credit has been increased, expanded, and fully refundable. It's increased from $2,000 to $3,600 for children under 6 and increased to $3,000 for children 6 to 17. It's expanded to include 17-year-olds. It's also expanded in that we removed the income floor. It used to be you had to have some earnings of $2,500. That's been removed. And it's fully refundable, which means it pays out even if you don't owe taxes at all. It was only partially refundable before. Also for the income levels, if you don't qualify for this new enhanced child tax credit, you'll still qualify for the regular child tax credit. So the income levels for the enhanced child tax credit begins to phase out at $75,000 for single, $112,500 for head of household, and $150,000 for joint. That's the same as the economic impact payments were. If you don't qualify for the new enhanced, you'll still qualify for the $2,000, the regular $2,000 child tax credit. And the phase out for that is $200,000 for single and head of household, or $400,000 for joint.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you've already filed your taxes, are these new child tax credits included, or is this something you'd have to go back in and do some amendment to?
Excellent question. So it will be based first on your 2020 tax return if you have it filed. If you do not have your 2020 filed, the IRS will look to 2019. Another very important thing to know is that the IRS will be setting up and making live another online portal. Like we had a portal for the initial economic impact payments, there's going to be a portal coming in the beginning of July. And that is where you'll be able to update your information. So maybe some things changed in 2021 because it's really based on this year. It's just using the past years to estimate what to pay you. So that portal, you'll be able to put information, like if you're a non-filer and you don't have a filing requirement, you can put your information in the portal. If you are newly unemployed, so your information is different than it was on your 19 or 2020 return, you'll be able to put that in the portal. If you have children born in 2021, which wouldn't be reflected on your past tax returns, you'll be able to put that information in your portal. So be looking for this portal, which should be live in the beginning of July.
Okay, thank you so much for that information. And Josh, I'm curious, you know, with the way the pandemic has impacted so many things, I'm sure it's impacted filing taxes. What are some of the most common issues that you're coming across?
Yeah, so Miriam, the biggest, I think, issue that we're seeing is kind of getting back to that processing issue. So we do have a lot of taxpayers who are able to what we call e-file, so they can sign an IRS form with their tax preparer and submit that form electronically. If they are not able to do that, and we see a variety of reasons why that might happen, then they actually have to go ahead and paper file those tax returns. And by paper filing it, we're just seeing a lot of delays in processing those returns. And as a result, a lot of taxpayers who are looking to get their refunds, you know, into their pockets quickly are unable to do so. And so that's caused a lot of problems. And it's something we see quite frequently right now.
Mm-hmm. And I know you mentioned a little bit, we talked about some unemployment situations. Is there anything that has come up, again, sort of related to the pandemic when trying to get unemployment?
That much I really don't know too much about. When it does come to unemployment, though, there has been some confusion in terms of how it should be reported on your tax return. And more specifically, kind of getting back to what I was saying previously, that the Congress passed the American Rescue Plan Act back in March, but the General Assembly actually didn't complete their session until the end of April. And as part of that, they finally got to updating the formula for the deduction for unemployment compensation for Indiana. And so that's kind of one of the other big things that I'm seeing right now. And so it's only now can taxpayers actually go back and if they haven't filed yet, should file using the correct deduction that's been put forth in House Bill 1001, so the state budget. But if they've already filed their taxes, both the Indiana Department of Revenue as well as the Internal Revenue Service is asking taxpayers to not amend their tax returns right now, as they're going to make those corrections themselves.
Okay. And is there sort of like a deadline for when you have to include these items?
Really, it's going to be May 17th, so a week from Monday.
Okay. So if you haven't filed your taxes yet, I guess get on it.
Absolutely.
Didi, I'm curious about, you know, there's so many new things coming out this tax season, including this child tax credit expansion. How aware are folks that come to you for help of these changes? Or is this something that there's still a lot of education that needs to be done?
There's still a lot of education that needs to be done. I mean, I'll just tell you, I was so surprised every time I go out and tell a friend or someone in the community or a family member, they have no idea what I'm talking about. So we're so tremendously thankful that, you know, you're helping us spread the word and get the information out there so that folks are ready, so that they're prepared, so that they know whether they need to get on that online portal, and that just that people know that monthly advance payments of the child tax credit are coming from July through December, that for children under six, it should be, if you qualify for the full credit, it'll be $300 a month. For children 6 to 17, it'll be $250 a month. And that's pretty exciting news to make sure that folks know.
And is this something that when you file your taxes, you'll see it? It'll be a deduction, or is this something completely separate, just so we're clear?
Well, just like the economic impact payments, that the IRS used the past tax returns to estimate it. So it's not on the 2020 return that they're filing now, but it will be part of the 2021 tax return. So the child tax credit, the enhanced child tax credit, will be part of the 2020 return that's filed next year. They're going to advance those payments from July through December for half of that credit.
Okay. And Josh, as we get ready to wrap up here, any words of advice for folks who are kind of hesitant to file their taxes on time?
Yeah. So my main words of encouragement is, first and foremost, file your returns and do your best to get them in on time. And more than that, that we at ILS, as well as the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic, are here to help. And so if taxpayers do have questions, we encourage them to reach out, because that is a part of our mission. It's what we live, eat, and breathe every single day. It's what we love to do. And so we're really just there to be a helping hand.
All right. Well, thank you both of you for joining us this afternoon. We really appreciate your time. Josh Lowenthal is a staff attorney for the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic at Indiana Legal Services. And Didi Gowan is a senior staff attorney for the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic, also at Indiana Legal Services. Our producers are Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, and Tim Brook. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Join us tomorrow for a conversation on housing and climate refugees. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All In.